Hey guys, it's photographer, author, and educator Jeff Ross here, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Hope you guys enjoy the show.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. The weather is better, and if you're a freelance photographer or a small business owner, you'd much rather be out in it shooting rather than dealing with paperwork, right? And that's where the cloud-based accounting software from FreshBooks comes in. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 86. No one cares about your photography and how you can change that. In this episode, Ted Forbes on why no one cares about your photography and what you can do about that. Hasselblad sets the record straight on zooms. SanDisk has a speedy new card. Rumors that Fujifilm will drop a mirrorless medium format system this year. And DxO loves Sigma's 30 and Canon's 1DX Mark II. All that and more in episode 86 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Jeff, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Jeff Rojas is a highly sought-after New York City-based portrait and fashion photographer who has been published in Elle, Esquire, and many other publications. He's an excellent photography educator who's taught at Creative Live, WPPI, Photo Plus Expo, Imaging USA, as well as APA, and he's currently touring around the United States teaching workshops, so you definitely want to check one of those out if it's in your area or you want to travel to one. His book, Photographing Men, did so well that he followed it up with another book called, that's right, Photographing Women. So make sure you check that out on Amazon.com and everywhere else that you can buy books these days. Jeff is a great human being, and if you'd like to find him online, all you have to do is flip his name around and you'll find him. And yes, I realize that's difficult, so follow me here. It's S-A-J-O-R-F-F-E-J on all social media that matters, or add .com to the end of that, and you'll find his website. Or you can just type in Jeff Rojas Photography into the Google, and you'll easily find him that way. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 86 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And if you're listening to us in a podcast player, don't forget to hit the subscribe button. Make sure you get every episode, and we would greatly appreciate that. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Guess what? Nobody cares about your photography. It's okay. Nobody cares about mine either. And I have a very popular podcast. But hey, there is something that you can do about it. And our good friend Ted Forbes over at The Art of Photography knows what it is. Now, you may recall that I met up with Ted last November in Salt Lake City, shortly before we moved from elsewhere in Utah to Boise, Idaho. You know, by that point, I had been watching or listening to Ted's show for many years, and he's one of the inspirations for the very show that you're listening to right now. You know, there's a very good reason why his YouTube channel is about to hit 200,000 followers. It's at about 193,000 as I record this, so what do you say we help him take it over the top, huh? Head on over to YouTube, type in Ted Forbes or The Art of Photography, and you'll find his channel. And it is deep stuff too, I gotta tell you. It's not just the how of photography, it's also the why. And it's that why part that we tend to forget about as we get wrapped up in gear and how to use it. Understanding why to take a photograph and exactly what we're trying to communicate is something that we've largely lost because we no longer have just 36 frames on a roll of film to use wisely. You can just hold down the shutter button, let her rip, you know, the spray and pray method, and not really think about it. But I don't think that's the best way to go. So that leads me to Ted's video, which I think every photographer should watch. It's about 7.5 minutes long, it'll get you thinking, and I feel like it's time well spent. For many of you listening to me right now, it's going to click something into place for you and inspire you to up your game. Listen, we're not curing cancer here, right? I mean, for some of us, it brings in an income so we can put food on the table. And for others, it's a pleasurable escape from the day job that you may or may not like. The day job that puts food on the table. But to stay engaged, inspired, and interested in photography, we need to get something out of it. Something that makes it worthwhile for us. I don't think I've mentioned it here on the show before, but there was an entire 14 years or so that I didn't pick up anything even resembling a serious camera. I had lost my passion for photography, but you know what? I found it again. I got back into photojournalism, which in part gave my photography meaning and purpose, of course. And that led me to launching my old photography podcast, which was then picked up by the ginormous Petapixel. And now I get to share my passion for photography with tens of thousands of people out there. What I'm going to do is play some select clips from Ted's awesome video, but it's definitely worth watching the whole thing. You know, it's not very long, as I said. So head on over to his YouTube channel or hit the show notes at petapixel.com/podcast. Look for episode 86 and we'll link you on over to that. In the meantime, though, let's hear what Ted said. Whoa, there I go rhyming again. I got to stop that.
You know, the world really doesn't need any more photographers. We have plenty. We're oversaturated. We don't need any more photographers. We don't need any more musicians. We don't need any more actors. We don't need any more writers. We certainly don't need any more films produced. We are oversaturated. There's too much stuff out there as it is. And I don't think this is necessarily a bitter truth, but I think it's a bitter default. The world does need work that matters. And that is really important. The world needs work that matters. In fact, I would take that even further. Our culture is dependent. Our survival as a culture is dependent on work that means something. And I firmly believe that this is the role the arts have always played in culture. Work that matters is important, and that's what you should be striving to do. It's not a popularity contest. It's creating something that means something. And I think that is so important. A couple years ago, I did a video with John Free, and John and I have met through doing video work, and I really think the world of John. And we did a video together where he was giving me a photography lesson. One of the things he said in that video was he said, "No more easy shots." And I loved that. And I thought it was interesting because in the comments, people were reacting kind of negatively to that. They thought, well, that was kind of rude of him to say, or that, some great work comes out when you're barely thinking about it. That's how you get your best work. And that's not what John meant. I don't disagree with those things, but they missed the point. The point that John was making is don't do simple stuff. Push yourself to go further. And it's not about, I've got a couple hours this weekend. I'm going to go take some photographs and take my camera. It's more than that. It's projects. It's things that culminate in a larger body of work. And, a perfect example of this is Bill Cunningham. Consuming Bill is very different than looking at the work of, people in the 1950s or something like that. It's so different. But Bill was of his time, and he made work that mattered. And those are two big things. You need to be of your time, and you need to make work that matters.
You know, what really resonated with me was when Ted talked about how our world needs work that matters. If you heard me on This Week in Photo episode 470 last week, you know that my pick of the week was the Veterans Portrait Project by former United States Air Force photojournalist Stacy Pearsall. While she was recovering in a hospital from combat injuries suffered in Iraq, Stacy came up with the idea to document veterans and bring more meaning to her photography. And that's something that each of us can do. For instance, no matter what country you're in, you could photograph your country's veterans. But it doesn't even have to be veterans. It could be anyone or anything. If you can think of a project that brings more meaning to your photography and keeps you interested and keeps you going, that would do amazing things for you. So if you're struggling like many are with their photography, do something that matters and gives you more enjoyment in the process. As Ted says in the video, create something that means something. Now, tying it all together, Ted had this to say at the end of this very awesome video.
You have to figure out what is that work that's going to matter. What are you trying to say as an artist, and how do you go about doing that? And that is the challenge. And it's not easy. And it's not something that you're going to discover in a couple minutes or in an hour or in a weekend or even in a couple years sometimes. It's something that you're constantly pursuing and working towards, but it is important. And like I said, sure, nobody wants to see my work. Nobody wants to see your work. Nobody cares, but we need work that makes a difference. We need work that means something. And that's the important part.
That is so true. Next. If you're a Sony E-mount shooter, you might want to have a serious look at Sigma's 30mm f1.4. And that's because DxOMark has tested it and says that it's its top-ranked Sony E-mount APS-C prime lens. According to them, the Sigma 30mm f1.4 DN contemporary lens is, quote, an excellent standard prime option for Sony E-mount cameras and ranks at the top for all lenses we've tested on the A6000, end quote. Now, what's especially great about this lens is that the Sigma comes in quite a bit cheaper than many of the other lenses in its class at just $340 US. If you compare that to the Zeiss 32mm f1.8 that it outperformed at nearly double the price, you see that it is a great, great value. I can't believe it myself. It beat the Zeiss. When does that ever happen? As we've said on the podcast before, Sigma lenses are the real deal. I own the 120 to 300mm f2.8 Sport, as well as the 24 to 105mm f4 Art, both in Nikon F mount, and they're tack sharp. They're amazing lenses. I've got zero complaints about them. And you know me, if I had a complaint, you would hear about it. So it's no surprise to me that this 30 would test very well, no doubt. They know what they're doing over there at Sigma, and their lenses should be in consideration if you're lens shopping. So many people, when they're buying lenses, just look at the Nikon or the Canon lenses. They don't look at Sigma, Tamron, and Tokina, and they really should, because you can save a lot of money. And in many cases, these lenses are better than the ones from Canon and Nikon. So there's that. Now, this particular 30mm from Sigma has a wider aperture than the others in its class. And on top of that, DxO says it's, quote, sharper in the center and more consistent across the frame, end quote. You know, when you're taking photos, having them be sharp and consistent is very nice. There's a lot of lenses out there that fall off on the edges, and that's a bit of a problem, and you have to crop. With this lens, not so much. Now, since this 30 is designed for crop sensor bodies like the Sony a6000 and a6300, it's the equivalent of a 45mm lens when you apply that 1.5x crop factor, so remember to keep that in mind. So that's pretty darn close to being your standard 50mm lens, what we call a nifty 50, and would be a great all-around lens for most people. And at $340 US with that f1.4 aperture to help you achieve that better background blur, you know, bokeh, it's going to be a great choice for a lot of people. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place, so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, on average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. Okay, first we heard rumors of a Sony mirrorless medium format system being in the works, and thus far we haven't seen that. But then Hasselblad dropped a bomb on everyone with their X1D camera, a mirrorless medium format system, and now we're hearing rumors that Fujifilm is getting in on this action, and they're going to be competing in the MMF market. And you know what? This is not surprising at all. These non-Canon, non-Nikon companies have nothing to lose and everything to gain by going after markets that the big two snub their noses at. Okay, Sharky, you say, why should Canon and Nikon care what happens in the medium format market when their game is all about the DSLR? Well, you see, they're in the camera business, period. And it should be that simple. It doesn't matter if it's DSLR, mirrorless, large format, whatever. They're in the business of selling cameras. The big two's DSLRs aren't selling as well as they used to, and they're just not lighting the world on fire anymore, are they? For many years now, for the average person, it was DSLR bust. Well, bust is happening. DSLR sales are terrible these days. Sony and the others came along and did something that Apple, under the late Steve Jobs, was known for doing, and that's giving you products that you didn't even know you wanted. Canon and Nikon, though, crickets. Chirp, 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 chirp. Seriously, I think that even the Canon and Nikon faithful would be hard-pressed to say with a straight face that they're innovating anywhere close to how Sony, Fujifilm, Olympus, and the others have. And just look at their sales figures and stock prices. It's clear where people are choosing to spend their money these days. No one even knows that they want medium format until A, they know what it is and see the quality afforded by it, and two, it's available at a reasonable price. Most DSLR shooters, of course, have never used a medium format system, and many aren't quite sure why they even would want one or why it matters, and that has to do with education. You don't know what you don't know, and the camera companies are going to let people know why medium format should matter to you, and you should consider it. These medium format cameras are always going to be pricier than DSLRs, of course, and other mirrorless systems, but there's a massive amount of people out there who care about quality and could be convinced to buy into a mirrorless medium format system. You know, your landscape shooters and certainly portrait and wedding photographers. Oh yeah, them. Also known as a lot of people. And Fujifilm knows that. You know, the folks over at Fujifilm are some of the smartest in the camera business. They have an amazing, amazing team over there. Some of the brightest that are available in this industry. And so if they have a medium mirrorless format system that's coming out, you can bet it is going to be amazing. And they're going to make the case in a big way for why you should consider it. I mean, look, obviously Hasselblad thinks there's a market out there for a mirrorless medium format system, and thus the X1D. The Hassi, though, is a $9,000 US camera, and they're a premium brand at the upper end of the market. So you're definitely going to see Fujifilm's MMF offering coming in quite a bit cheaper than that one. Now, this might be a little bit of wishful thinking on my part, but I think that that Fujifilm mirrorless medium format camera is going to be announced at about $6,500 US. Pricey enough to be taken serious as a medium format body, but affordable enough that anybody who wants to get completely out of a DSLR system that has a number of lenses and maybe a body or two could sell off their gear and be within striking distance of owning one of these, along with at least one lens. Now, I think that most people are going to have to kick in a few thousand dollars out of pocket, but I think there's enough people out there who shoot a limited range of things that they're willing to make a normal to wide-angle lens work for a while with one of these new cameras should Fujifilm come out with one and call it good. But should that scare Nikon and Canon? Oh, heck yeah, it should. You know, these new MMF systems that we're starting to see threaten to chip away at the top end of Canon and Nikon systems where they make a huge chunk of change, and that means even less DSLRs that they'll sell. The big two continue to take it on the chin from Sony and the others. You know, they're getting hit from all sides as they continue to put out DSLRs with the most minor of updates and tell us that we should be happy with that. And a lot of people are just sick of it. Again, look at their sales figures and stock prices. This isn't conjecture, this is reality. So according to our friends over at Fuji Rumors, Fujifilm is planning to get into the mirrorless medium format game as early as this September. And if you've been following along, you know that's when Photokina happens. That's the massive photo industry trade show that happens every 2 years in Cologne, Germany. The same trade show where many are hoping and predicting that Canon and Nikon will release viable mirrorless systems. But not mirrorless medium format, mirrorless systems like we've seen from Sony and the others. But maybe they've missed the boat on this. You know, I keep hearing from people that at this point, that ship has sailed for them. Boat, ship. Okay, we got a little bit of a nautical theme going on here. Let's just go with it. But you get the point here. It might be a little bit too late for the big two to put something out there that people actually want. I mean, it's going to have to be amazing and on par, or at least in the ballpark of what Sony and the others have out. And as I've said before, if it doesn't take their current lenses, most people are going to be like, you know what? Forget it. I'm not buying a whole set of lenses for this new Canon or Nikon mirrorless system. It's got to use my current glass. Otherwise, no deal. So of this rumored Fujifilm MMF, they're saying that it'll have a 50 megapixel sensor, and that makes a lot of sense, of course. And it'll launch with three lenses designed specifically for this system. They're also saying that it won't ship until sometime in 2017, hopefully on the earlier end. Big things are happening in the photo industry this year. Well, I guess medium things. Next. In our last episode, I told you about Hasselblad's statement on its official Facebook page that zoom lenses for their new X1D mirrorless medium format system were, quote, almost impossible theoretically, end quote. Well, now Hasselblad CEO Perry Oosting says that statement was actually not true. A few days ago, Oosting met up with our friends over at Digital Rev's Bokeh blog in Hong Kong and wanted to set the record straight. The CEO said, quote, "Let me correct that a little bit. There will be more lenses coming. There will be also zoom lenses coming. So that is something we have to correct," end quote. Now, who knows why there's mixed messages coming out of Hasselblad, but whoever was in charge of their social media that day apparently isn't completely in the loop here. But now we've heard from the one who would know best, and that just made an already interesting camera system even more interesting. Knowing that zooms are coming is going to make a lot of people happy. You know, this is more of a handholdable body, much like a DSLR and the other mirrorless bodies out there. And while prime lenses are all fine and good, and most people are going to be using them with the X1D, having zoom lenses available instantly extends the usefulness of this system, and that's awesome. Things are getting to the point where systems like this are going to be able to shoot just about everything that you throw at it. Now, they're not well suited for sports and action, of course, but what's to say that down the road, they won't be? I mean, they can shoot a few frames a second right now, but eventually, they're going to get it to the point where it can do 10, 11 frames a second. Can you imagine medium format sports? That's going to be insane. Just as mirrorless systems in general will eventually have parity with the DSLR to the point where I believe that most, if not all, cameras will no longer have a mirror in them. They're just not needed. Just as I've always said here on the podcast, if you were to design a camera today with the available technology that we have, you just wouldn't put a mirror in them. In an episode 470 of This Week in Photo that I was on, host Frederick Van Johnson explained that the mirror in DSLRs was a hack. It was there because it had to be because there was no other way to make it work. But now you don't need a mirror, and people freak out because they're like, no, I want things to be the way they are with my DSLR. But it's okay. As long as the experience for users is the exact same way, you wouldn't care if the mirror is in that or not. Who wouldn't want all the benefits of mirrorless in their current cameras? I mean, being able to see your exposure live in the EVF is a wonderful thing, especially if you're new to photography. And if you're not, why take a picture, look at the back of your LCD, and then bring it up to your eye again and take a picture, when you can just look through the EVF, see what you're dealing with, and adjust accordingly? That is much faster. And in today's competitive photography world, who wouldn't want the advantage over the guy next to them, or the gal next to them, right? Now, when it comes to zooms in a mirrorless medium format system, or any system, those are needed, of course. And Hasselblad knows this, and it's nice to hear that those are coming. Next. In episode 85, we talked about problems Canon says that the SanDisk CFast 2.0 cards were having in its flagship body, the 1DX Mark II, and who knows what's going on with that nonsense, but they're in the process of sorting it out. And if you don't have that camera, you don't have to worry about it, actually. But in the meantime, SanDisk, a brand that I actually prefer myself, has announced the world's fastest 256GB microSD card. These cards are so tiny that they have a ridge on them for your thumbnail to catch on, so you can get them out of those adapters that look like full-size SD cards. You can use them via an adapter in your camera, but they're right at home in a GoPro, a drone, or any number of devices these days. Now, you may recall that Samsung recently came out with a 256GB card, but the SanDisk Extreme microSD XC UHS-I card is the world's fastest microSD card, with transfer speeds up to 100 megabytes per second and write speeds up to 90 megabytes per second. The company says it can hold up to 14 hours of 4K video, which is a lot of video at that resolution. But if you don't need these crazy fast speeds because you're not shooting in 4K, just go ahead and pick up their slightly slower 256GB Ultra Micro SD XC Premium Edition card. That one's going to allow you to hold up to 24 hours of full HD video, also known as 1080p, and has transfer speeds of up to 95 megabytes per second. Both of these cards are rugged, as they're waterproof, temperature-proof, shock-proof, and x-ray-proof, within certain standards, of course, so you definitely want to check that out. But these are the ones that are going to be the go-to if you want something with a little bit more durability. Their faster Extreme card will be available sometime in the fourth quarter of 2016, also known as somewhere between October and December, for about $200 US, and the Ultra Premium Edition will arrive sometime in August of this year for just $150. You know, speeds aside, it blows my mind that 256GB of data can fit on something the size of a human thumbnail. That is just crazy talk right there. and eventually we're going to have multiple terabytes. Insane. Next. Also out of DxOMark is word that the Canon 1DX Mark II takes top marks among all Canon bodies that they've ever tested. And this is really not surprising considering it's their latest and greatest flagship body, of course. In their testing, the 1DX Mark II beats the 5DS and 5DSR bodies. Itself an impressive feat because those are amazing, amazing cameras. But it's the camera's dynamic range across its usable ISO range that is really impressing them. Of this, they said, quote, "Some small gains were made in both low ISO and high ISO color noise levels, but more significant is the widening of the dynamic range from base ISO 100 to ISO 3200. The 13.5 EV dynamic range at base is the best in the maker's range," end quote. Now, for those that aren't familiar with the term, EV stands for exposure value. And in super simple terms, everything from the blackest blacks to the whitest whites is assigned a value. So the larger the range, the more your camera is able to see, basically. That's, of course, why some people shoot multiple images and do HDR photography so they can capture more of that dynamic range. Because these days, our cameras can't capture everything. If you're shooting interiors, you can't see what's outside the window and inside at the same time in one frame. Your eye can see it, but the camera can't. Someday, however, our cameras are going to be able to capture the great range that our eyes can see. You know, we're not there yet, but that day is coming. Now, when compared to its predecessor and the 1DS Mark III, DxOMark had this to say. Quote, "At ISO 100, the EOS 1DX Mark II had a plus 1.5 to 1.7 EV advantage over both models and still maintains a wider range, albeit lower at 0.8 EV at ISO 800 compared to the Mark I. It has a staggering plus 1.7 advantage over the Mark III at that setting, and it widens to 2 EV at ISO 3200, end quote. Okay, those are noticeable gains. You know, if you're shooting the older body and know the results that you're getting in various lighting conditions, you'll see the difference when reviewing your photos using the 1DX Mark II. It's going to be super obvious that there's a difference between those two bodies. Now, you get a flagship body like this, of course, when you need a camera that can handle everything. And that's why they're the go-to in the photojournalism world. Of that, DxOMark says, quote, "The sensor performance offers photographers the versatility to tackle a wide range of assignments with just one camera," end quote. So you can see what these things sell for upwards of $6,000 US. They can help you do everything you need to do, and they just get out of your way. It's awesome. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 86 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lenshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lenshark. That's L-E-N-S-S-H-A-R-K. And don't forget, if you want to help support this show, head on over to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter Petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. They've got a 30-day free trial for you, and we'd greatly appreciate it if you checked it out. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 87. Well, it's f8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
Such a rough day to record. Airplanes, fireworks, all kinds of nonsense. Move near the airport, they say. It'll be okay. Why do people like to fly their airplanes when it's nice out? I don't get it. It's all sunny and you can see things. Who wants that?